You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with S. Surface. They are talking to me from Seattle. S., thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thank you for having me on your show.
So let's talk about what's happening there. I mean, you're in Seattle now, and of course, we're right in the midst of this corona pandemic. What are you doing? What's happening with your position in the government and in the Office of Arts and Culture?
Well, I'm doing a few things. So I'll speak a little bit to maybe what I'm working on specifically and a little overview of what we're working on at Arts, and then some ways that the coronavirus situation has impacted that. So at the Office of Arts and Culture, we normally do a whole range of things. Our office does a lot of grant making to individual artists and to organizations. And me specifically, I run an art gallery called Arts at King Street Station, where I oversee a group of advisors who select performers, event hosts, and exhibitors for art installations based on an open application. So a lot of that work is still going on in the sense of we are planning for the future. So people who have already been accepted, we are planning on doing their exhibitions and events. And unfortunately, have had to delay at least one exhibition and one major event. We will eventually do them, but we are in this limbo where we don't know when they will be rescheduled to. So that's one thing that's been changed. Something I'm pretty glad about is that we are able to keep paying all of our artists on their normal schedule. So as many organizations cancel things or funding slips away, we are able to sustain people, which is a great privilege.
So tell me a little bit more of that before we move on. By sustaining people, what that's through grants. Tell me a little bit about that exact process, because I think that's so important, and it's really why I'm talking to you now, or one of the reasons. How do you sustain them, and how does that work?
Well, in our normal course of operations, we do have our grants, large and small. Some are sort of rapidly, you know, you ask for about $500 and you get it within a few weeks. Others are much larger, and, you know, a public art commission that might have a huge budget and take years to produce. I can't necessarily speak to the ins and outs of those because other staff own that work. But for me, you know, it's just kind of, people are applying to do projects, and then we do them, and then they get paid. So it's not anything too unusual. The government-y way of putting it is that I hire contractors to deliver a service. And, but in the immediate thing, we actually have done some major reworking of our workload. So I myself have been lent to another city department to help with small business relief funding, so helping with some of the administration of that. And I'm also continuing my own work with the people that we have coming up. Our department has actually supported a artist-led endeavor, several of them. One of them was the artist and writer Ijeoma Oluwo created a fundraiser independently, and we have added funds to that and are helping her with some administration so she doesn't have to take on distributing money just piecemeal by herself. And we are also having a lot of other project managers rethink some of the upcoming work to consider the coronavirus situation. So, you know, calls for submissions on art that might thematically relate to it, including information resources, as well as promoting work that's being done in this moment through social media. We've been coordinating with other nonprofits and other regional arts agencies and just the government generally speaking, so that we're all aligned with the efforts, making sure that first and foremost people are staying safe, that they're getting information they need to be healthy. And then after that, trying to, you know, keep people afloat and keep things going as much as we can, figuring out ways to adapt what we thought we were going to do in person, but maybe it needs to be online or remote now. So we've got our finger in a whole lot of pies and just really trying to take a very diverse approach, working with what we have and, you know, some additional funding that's been opened up through the crisis to help get it into our community's hands.
And how will that play out? Because this is, of course, what every institution, or what many institutions, art institutions, are dealing with across the country and around the globe. How, I mean, I guess there's there's really a number of ways to kind of talk about this. There's the art gallery that's kind of your project that you work with, but I suppose this is getting into all areas. How are things going to suddenly go online? What does that mean? In one way, it seems straightforward, but of course, it's not, right, to just have an exhibit online. What does that mean now, or what have you been talking about in terms of what that means?
So what that means is it's a big question for a lot of us. So I think the first thing that comes to mind is saying, I don't know. But we are thinking of some actual specifics. So there is an initiative with a group of arts organizations to create a centralized live streaming platform where instead of a whole range of piecemeal auctions, people can know where to go to do that, get some technical support. And I think they may also be able to receive funding or tips through that. We got some outreach from a local graphic design firm that's looking to help bring our first Thursday Art Walk online by having a bunch of galleries send 10 images from their exhibition they have up right now that they will create some kind of live stream, call in either the gallery director or curator or artists or some combination of them from each show to speak to the work, maybe do a little, these are my favorite things, or here's several pieces I'd like to highlight. So thinking about the best way to try to get people to know who the artists are and where the galleries are. I think the thing that's really stood out to me is that everyone is diving in to help, and it's very comprehensive. So something that's been very important to us is to think of, think of the artists as part of our community. Of course, artists and
you said everybody's diving in to help?
Yes. Yes, everyone's diving in to help and really just trying to think up a lot of things while also trying to be conscientiously, amplifying rather than duplicating existing efforts and not sort of adding to chaos, but trying to help people make things more accessible.
And what does that mean practically? Like in terms of, we could talk about the gallery, but also there's a call out and you're getting in art and artists are also responding to the crisis, which I imagine also mixes in with some of what you've just been talking about health, right? I mean, what I'm asking is I'm curious what kind of, if it's not too early to say or to ask, what kind of work do you see coming in that's different from what you've seen before? Because it is most likely addressing, or at least it's within the context of the pandemic.
Yeah, for me personally, it probably is too early to say. I haven't yet personally gotten any work that directly is the coronavirus. It's really, a lot of it is pretty unglamorous. It's not like these radical new initiatives are starting and it's amazing. Honestly, people, I think, are adjusting. They're a bit shell-shocked. They're trying to figure out healthcare or maybe how to move their day job on.
And for the work that you're doing in your gallery and the station, how do you see curating in the future? What does that mean to you? You've been looking through projects and working with people. Do you see a change in how you're going to be curating or selecting artists in the future, or is that not the case? Is there not a big change there?
The King Street Station has always been to lift up communities of color with an emphasis on artists and individuals who have not yet had opportunities before. So I don't see that changing. But what I hope that this results in is that some of the tools that we are now using for distance engagement will continue to be in place so that we can be more accessible to people who can't always physically make it, whether that's due to some physical disability or they're geographically distant, can't afford to travel. We have been able to rapidly accelerate our use of certain technologies, which, of course, expand accessibility for some, but might be the access barrier to others themselves. But it's just one more tool in the toolkit. And so I do think that having some of these ways of bringing people into the room when they aren't necessarily in the room, I hope that that will sort of add just to our capacity in the long term.
I'm sure it will. And it seems that the arts, and I've just begun, I mean, I've been doing interviews for years, and it's gone through several sort of historical crises, and this is one, and it seems that there's a kind of I don't know if solidarity is quite the right word, but it seems that all the art organizations are on the same page. They're trying to figure out how to serve artists in another way or in a different way or in this time. But it seems in a way so odd because art, of course, is largely a physical activity. And so we're trying to find ways, or it seems organizations are trying to find ways of trying to make the physical something that's online, that's not visible. And I wonder, as a curator, I mean, what do you think about that? Because, of course, online exhibitions have been around for years. That's not new. But the idea of moving this far away from the physical object is new, right?
I think that, I hope that it is, again, the sort of requirement that it strictly be online is temporary. As someone who actually identifies as sick and disabled, I have long been a part of the disability justice movement. And so a lot of these conversations are not new to me. They are just the accommodations that myself and my comrades have been advocating for over a decade in terms of making things accessible and having, you know, cleansing products readily available for people who are immune compromised like myself. So, you know, a lot of it does feel like the things that I've been doing for a long time personally and have been advocating for are finally catching up. So I might be a bit of an outlier in the art world because it doesn't feel so drastic or different to me. I'm someone who has never felt that in-person interaction is more valid than digital or interfaced interaction. I'm thinking of the very first show I ever curated on my own, where one of the artists was, and I say was because he's since passed away, living on a ventilator, and he lived in his apartment. He did not move from his bed, and he was a painter who painted using a trackball mouse. The artist's name is Nick Dupree. I don't want to just erase his name and his identity, but anyway, he was someone who painted strictly digitally. Most of our and his social interactions were online, either through texting and various social media or occasionally voice chat. He used a trach to speak, but he never physically made it to the gallery to see his work in place. It would have taken more resources than would have been safe for him to leave his home. And he Skyped or Google Hangout or whatever the technology was in like 2014 into our opening reception and some other live events that we had. And so this is, you know, from literally the beginning of when I curated an art show, like this stuff is something I've done. So it feels more like I have a lot of gratitude that it's becoming more normalized. And I hope that the work that people in the disability community have done is lifted up as part of this rather than being erased. And I guess that's where I'm coming at it. But I've always been kind of a weirdo in that sense.
Well, I don't know if weirdo is quite the right word, but right. I'm so glad that you mentioned that because, you know, that's something that's happening through this crisis. That's like you're saying, something that you are already familiar with, but in a sense, it's also bringing to light other communities, as you were saying, the disabled community or other communities that. That have been dealing with this same issue for a while. It also highlights that a little bit as well, doesn't it? Because, you know, in the sense that, you know, I love that you answered it that way. My questions, of course, seem biased and seem like they're not recognizing that communities, mm-hmm. which is probably the case. So in a way, would you say or can we say that this crisis is shedding light on communities that should have had light shed on them before, but haven't.
That's the hope. That, I mean, that's the sort of, if there is a silver lining, that's one of them. Of course, in the outside of the art world ends of things, I think that the crisis has a huge implication for sick and disabled community. I mean, when you hear things about only old and already sick people are the ones who die from this, and you are one of those people, it's it does kind of illuminate what the majority thinks of you, that you're disposable. And so I hope that through just education and always naming that this work has been done, and, you know, we have these tools through whether that's the entrepreneur who invented it or the people who have been using it for a long time because it met their needs in various ways, to just sort of rigorously keep mentioning that and making sure that it is, you know, lifted up. Like, I remember when Black Lives Matter first emerged as a hashtag and it took off in the media, and then retroactively the people who actually founded it and their supporters had to really fight for that recognition and ownership, and same for Me Too. So where sometimes things that were started by a social movement get co-opted, and it's not that it's bad for it to gain a more mainstream acceptance, but you just want to recognize the history and be accurate and thorough about where it originated. Mm-hmm. So those principles can remain in the conversation as the technology or the new skill proliferates.
Mm. Thanks. That's so well put, and I'm really glad we discussed specifically that. And I have a couple more questions to ask you. One is, in terms of Seattle, is there anything, there'll be links in here to open calls if there are any that you send me, but is there anything you want to plug or say to artists that are either in Seattle or elsewhere in terms of open calls or anything in this time?
Yeah, so there are a few specific fundraisers for artists, but I would also really encourage people to think of themselves not strictly as an artist. I mean, if you're renting a studio, you are renting commercial space, you're a small business person, you're a commercial tenant, you are a neighbor, maybe you are a person of color, maybe you are disabled, maybe you are a veteran, maybe you live in a certain council person's district or whatever it is. I mean, you don't need to only be thinking of yourself as an artist or designer or whatever you are. So don't hesitate to access resources that are available to you in all of your capacities as a person. Something that I noticed is that a lot of artists will, or people, not just artists, will say, oh, there's got to be someone who's more deserving than me for this funding or this assistance or this opportunity. And I would say, don't necessarily assume that about yourself. If you need support, you need support, no matter who you are or your background. So just feel entitled. Own that you deserve to be supported, and it's a privilege to help support you. And also, know your situation. If you actually really could get by without assistance and you know that it's limited, then maybe step back until the time is right. There's a lot of assistance that's not cash or an opportunity, where on one hand, I think it's okay to sit and rest and reflect and accept support and not feel like you have to be entrepreneurial or creative right now. But if you do feel so compelled, then, you know, nothing can stop you, and the artists already know that. They don't really need to be told.
Thank you for saying that. And one more question is, what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious what people are reading.
I am reading a lot of quite dry textbooks about programming analysis. I am trained as an architect, and I'm about halfway through my architect registration exams. So I have been spending for the past year most of my spare time in reading just on these study prep materials. Because I work in a non-architecture capacity, it's one way that I stay in touch with my field and progress as an architect in training, even though I'm not working it. It's actually great, because I think that psychologically I couldn't stand to study really technical and nerdy architecture stuff if I were working at a firm full-time. So it's kind of how I get my architecture fixed, and I have a lot of support in my arts role to pursue that. So it's been a good balance, and I'm kind of taking all of this, you know, shaving off my commute time and having a little more time at home to study. And when I read for fun, I've been reading some Monique Wittig kind of queer feminist poetry stuff from the 70s and 80s.
Well, great. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I want to thank you for the work that you're doing, and thank you for talking with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And
you're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.